Hey guys, welcome to Seeking What They Sought. My name is Jesse. I'm here with Sean and Anthony, and Natalie is our guest today. Natalie DeRisme, who is a pastor in the Washington Conference. Now, Natalie, I was just remembering that, so the three of us guys went to Auburn Academy. You went to Puget Sound Adventist Academy, meaning that in all actuality, we are complete rivals. In fact, we shouldn't even be talking to each other right now. So Natalie went to PSA, and then we all went to Walla Walla around the same time. I think you were probably, a year or two behind us, and you did theology. Yeah, so like we kind of knew each other from college there. And then you and I have served in the Washington Conference together for a long time until recently I came down here to California. But we were just talking about how you're now at the church where I started out in my old office. So you've replaced me, Natalie.
Yeah, it's wild.
probably for good reason. That was my year coming out of college where I was like, I'm pretty sure that I know more than I'm pretty sure I'm like God's gift to Adventism. I wouldn't have said that, but I probably felt that.
That was Jesse's angst year.
No, it wasn't angst. It was like just give me a shot and I'll change everything. And then I had no work ethic and I had no follow through any of that. So I feel bad.
That still hasn't changed, but
it actually has a lot, Sean, since I've had two kids. That totally forces you. Yeah, absolutely. So anyways, that's kind of the funny stuff. But Natalie, we're really glad you're on the podcast. How long have you been pastoring for now?
I've been pastoring since 2016. So I started in January of 2016. You can do the math based on whatever you're listening to this of how long I've been pastoring now. So what is that? About 8 years?
Yeah, 7 years, 8 years almost. So let's just kind of go back to the beginning. Did you grow up Adventist?
I did. Yeah. I was born into a Seventh-day Adventist family. My parents grew up Seventh-day Adventist. I think it was in my grandparents' generation where they converted into the Seventh-day Adventist church. But even then, they were from Christian backgrounds. So I feel very, very seeped in Adventism. Yeah.
And what was that experience like growing up for you in Adventism? Like, was it an overall positive experience? Was there some stuff about it that was just like, you look back and you're like, oh, that was really negative? Or what were your thoughts?
Yeah. I think as a kid, I derived a lot of my identity from what I'll call Adventist culture, like being a cultural Adventist, if that makes sense. Like almost all of my friends were also Seventh-day Adventists from my church, or they were kids of my parents' friends that were also Adventists from area churches. And so pretty much everything in my life as a child was connected to Adventism somehow, except for in my neighborhood. That's pretty much the only space that wasn't Adventist, because the schools that I went to all the way through my master's degree, everything has been Seventh-day Adventist education, which has been great. But I've realized, like, everywhere I have worked, everywhere I've been involved with serving or doing volunteer work, it's all been Adventism. And most of my friends growing up, Seventh-day Adventist. So as a kid, I think I saw it very positively because I didn't know any different. A lot of times I wonder if I had been born into a different religion or a different version of Christianity, how would I look at Seventh-day Adventists? What would I think about the church, this church and this denomination? And it's fun to think that way. But I realize that a lot of who I am today is the result of growing up Seventh-day Adventist and choosing to wrestle with my own faith and then deciding, yeah, I'm going to stick with this. It makes sense to me. Yeah.
Would you say you grew up in a traditional space, or was it maybe more like a centrist or liberal?
I think I grew up more on the traditional side, not like ultra conservative or anything, but more traditional than some areas of Adventism probably. Yeah.
So coming out of that, why did you decide to, what made you decide that you were going to, adopt the role of, I'm going to be a female pastor someday and just, you know, disappoint all of my traditional friends. No, just
kidding. There it is. I mean, like, there it is. How, you thwarted the church's patriarchy. Identity. You decided to go against what you were taught and brought up.
I know.
See, yeah, like, what's your story there? Part,
this is the funny part, is that although a lot of areas of my life were pretty traditional in Adventism, I literally never knew that there was an issue with females being pastors until I was like a senior in high school. That's the first time that I remember ever finding out about that. So I don't know if that's just because my parents very intentionally sheltered me from those toxic areas of the church. I don't know. Or if it's just like, it just never came up in conversation. I'm not sure. Because I think back on my childhood, and it was completely within the Washington Conference. That's where I grew up, in Washington State, close to Seattle area. And I maybe saw a few female pastors that worked in the conference through things like going to camp meeting, or maybe hearing a guest speaker once in a while. And one of our pastors, his wife became commissioned during the time that they were at our church. So thinking back, it's like, okay, yeah, I guess maybe I did see a few female pastors, but at the time, like as a kid, it's just not something I even really thought about, because most of the pastors that I had a relationship with or was mentored by were men, but it was never like an issue. It was just kind of like, in my mind, I thought of a pastor, and in my mind, that picture would usually be a guy, but I didn't really ever think about like, oh, girls, some people say girls can't do that job. Like, I just never thought about it. So it was in high school that I kind of started to have to wrestle with that. And if you want, I can launch into that story.
Well, yeah, no, tell us how you became a heretic and decided to go against the word of the Lord.
How I became the devil incarnate.
Yeah, exactly.
I've been called a couple of times.
Wow.
Really?
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
In person, nice. Like directly, not like through an email or...
I think maybe only once in person. Mostly it's been like either handwritten letters or emails, though.
She said once in person as if that's a normal thing.
Yeah, I know.
I'm so sorry. That's
just wild. Once.
It's the weird part of the job. Yeah. So I, as a kid growing up Seventh-day Adventist, I'll start there. I was, I think, very in tune with like, God has a plan for your life kind of messaging. And Jesus loves you so much. And kind of the missional message that Adventism tends to have of kind of like, you're meant to like go out into the world and do something great and make a difference in people's lives. I very much grasped onto that as a kid. And I think, thankfully, like because I did have good parents and grew up in a loving, safe home environment where my faith and the way that they taught it to me was healthy and it wasn't like bad in any way or something, because all of those pieces of my life were healthy. I grew up with a really good relationship with God and relationship to the church and wrestling with my faith and stuff, and felt like it was okay to ask questions. And so all through my grade school years, I was exploring, kind of like exploring my own relationship with God and what is God's plan for my life. And I had a couple of what I believe are miracle experiences that happened in my life that really just kind of opened my eyes to God's existence, if that makes sense. And it was sort of in my like middle school years where I remember that transition happening in my brain from like, okay, this is my parents' faith and these things I've been taught, to, oh, I get to decide if I actually believe this stuff for myself. I get to choose if I believe that God is real or not. And so through middle school, kind of sixth, seventh, eighth grade is when I remember just deeply wrestling with it. And like at night before bed in my room, I'd be like reading through all these different Bible passages and kind of trying to proof text myself, if that makes sense, like ask questions and then figure out if what I believe is actually true, is actually real. And so I spent a couple years in that age range of just really wrestling with the Adventist version of Christianity specifically and deciding for myself if it was something that I wanted to believe in and if I really believed that God was real and actually working actively in my life. And for me, I came to the conclusion that yes, that was true. And I felt like God was real and that he is an active part of my life, that I could have this personal relationship with Jesus. And I had powerful moments in my relationship with Jesus at that age that kind of, I think, solidified for me that, yes, I want to serve God going forward in my life. What career at that point? I had no idea. But that's where I think the spark happened for me, if that makes sense. That's so,
I mean, if you've been spending 2 years studying your Bible, I think that you're, I mean, it sounds like you're going to be a pastor. Sorry.
I was going to say, you said you were struggling, you were wrestling with like the Adventist version of, you know, Christianity. And I was just imagining like sixth grade Natalie, like in her room, like with all these charts, like the Illuminati guy in that GIF with the Illuminati, like, okay, so if this verse says this, there's a 2300 day prophecy, 1844. And you're like,
oh my goodness.
That'd make her a true Adventist if she was.
That is true.
That's what it means to be an Adventist.
That'd be the most Adventist thing.
It's the Charlie Day thing. Some of that, but. I think it was more for me. It was like, oh, I want to prove that like the Sabbath is right and kind of thing. Not so much like.
I mean, that sounds right. Yeah, that's
not. That age, like a little 12-year-old, that's what was important to me. It was like, is the Sabbath the real day of worship or not?
All the adults, right? Yeah.
Wait.
Yeah.
So then, like, did you have a moment where you'd say you felt a call? I mean, that's a part of a lot of pastor stories. Was there a moment for you where, I mean, obviously you heard it wrong because you're a woman and you can't be a pastor, but I mean, like, was there?
Clearly.
Sorry, I'm going to keep making those jokes just because.
Call up the devil.
You know, I have loved being your coworker in the past.
We've had some fun chats.
Was there a moment for you where like you felt a call?
So, and this is where, when I was thinking about what I wanted to share today, I was like, well, do you want the 3-hour version or? Right. The like 20-minute version. So I'll kind of try and distill it down, but I think the miracle experience for me in my middle school years is what kind of started it for me, because I had a moment where like I could have been hit by a car, but I felt like I don't know if it's an angel or something like pushed me back off of the road.
Dang.
And I've talked about that story a little bit before. It actually happened here at the Auburn Academy campus during camp meeting.
Wow.
So,
oh, man.
It's kind of coming full circle. Wow.
So you're saying the reckless drivers of Adventist camp meeting almost,
let me call them out.
Almost got you.
Listen, I'll tell you what. This isn't the first story I've heard like that from Auburn camp meeting. I mean,
that's true. Yeah. People are wild.
I've heard so many stories, but. No, I love Auburn camp meeting. Sorry, I'm not dissing on Auburn. We all grew up at Auburn camp meetings, so we have so many stories probably of the adventures of that. But keep going, Natalie.
So that was one moment that just after that, I had this sit-down conversation with my grandma, my very sweet grandma, who's been an Adventist teacher all her life. And she talked to me about, and this was like around, like I think this was between 5th grade and 6th grade in the summer. Mm. And she talked to me about how like God cares about me and he created me and we have angels that protect us and those sorts of things. And so it kind of made me feel like, God actually knows who I am. Mm-hmm. Like little Natalie, random of all the people on this earth, like he knows me. And so that's when I mentioned before, when I started kind of diligently like studying the Bible for myself, I got baptized after that. And after I got baptized, I had some really solid mentorship and discipleship. I think from my general Adventist community, the pastors of my local church were always intentional in talking to me. Shout out to Pastor Malin from Bellevue. I remember he was one of the pastors that was really intentional in encouraging me, lifting me up. My Pathfinder Club at the time, I think the adults that were involved in that could see something in me. And so they were also intentional about giving me opportunities to serve, letting me do worship talks, letting me try stuff, do sermons for church, that sort of thing. And so for those late grade school years and kind of it transitioned into early high school, I just had a lot of opportunities to share my faith in some way, to lead in religious spaces, to lead in my church and help out in some way. And all of those things led to, in high school, I started thinking about the job of what a pastor does. And I wouldn't say that I had like one specific moment where it was like, God was telling me very clearly, like, you will be a pastor. But I had kind of like a series of small things that built up to that call, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so throughout high school, just with all the different ways I was involved in campus ministries, involved in stuff at my church, speaking and preaching a lot, I was asked a lot if I had been thinking about becoming a pastor. And so then I had to wrestle with it, like, well, would I want to become a pastor? What do pastors even do? I didn't know at the time. What does a pastor do other than preach at church? And so that's kind of the age where I was starting to think more seriously about, like, would I want to do this for a career?
And then from there, like, you went to, you went into college at Walla Walla, did theology, came out, got hired by Washington, by the Washington Conference. And,
sorry, Jesse, can we just pause right there?
Cause
we had mentioned earlier that Natalie, you were maybe like a year behind us or something like that, or two. I don't know how many, but I did actually didn't know that, because when I became theology, I was just like, man, Natalie's like the, she's like the queen of the theology department. She's like the poster child. Like, that's literally how I viewed you. I was like, Natalie is like, she can do no wrong. She's amazing at everything. And I'm like, hopefully one day I can be a theology major like her. Like, I remember that being the vibe at the time.
So it's always, it's interesting looking back on your former self. And I think how this connects to our topic of like thinking about what a Seventh-day Adventist is and kind of delving into that. Here's where the story connects for me with my Adventist identity, I suppose. Because once I made that decision of, okay, I'm going to go to college and I'm going to be a theology major. At the time, I was an overachiever, so I was a nursing and theology major.
Oh, I forgot that. About that.
Wow, yeah. Right. My little tangent for that is that I really wanted to do medical mission work. And so I thought those two paired really well for that. I don't know if I'll ever do mission work anymore, but at the time that was my like big goal. So I was like, nursing and theology, perfect. So once I committed to that pastor thing, I think like many new converts or people who are young pastors or new to faith, you get very zealous about it, right? And I think that's what I was experiencing in my early college years, was like, okay, I am very zealous about the faith. I'm super into this stuff. Like, I am going to be the best pastor out there. I'm going to be the like most amazing speaker. And so I had all these like high standards that I wanted to reach, all these goals I wanted to accomplish. But I think a lot of it at the time for me was rooted in pride, which I didn't realize back then. But since being in ministry for a little while, I've been humbled, and I've also read a lot about, or learned a lot about, how sometimes people with narcissistic tendencies get drawn to careers like pastoring, where you can be upfront a lot. And so I think it's a common career for people to, if they go into it, to struggle with pride. Like, most likely at some point as a pastor, you're going to struggle with being prideful about your own accomplishments. And I think that I was in that weird phase in my early college years where I was very strongly feeling God's call, and I was trying to respond to that call to the best of my ability. But I was also internally struggling with feeling like I'm not good enough, and like very with personal stuff, feeling like I will never measure up and be good enough. And the outcome of that was like, let me prove myself and be the best that I can be and show everybody that I'm meant to do this and show everyone that God did call me. And I think since you mentioned like the female pastor side of that, I think that played into it as well. Like, well, as a woman, like, I've got to show them I can do this and that I can do it well and that God is working in my life. And so it's not that God wasn't working through me at that phase and all the different things that were going on, but I think he knew I had a lot of growing to do. And so it's always funny to me when people talk about me in my college years at Walla Walla, because I look back on myself of like, oh man, I was not humble. And
I think we all do in our
lives. We all look back and we're just like, yikes.
I will say, like, just to tag off what you're saying there, Natalie, I would have never have said this before it happened, but I do think that there needs to be almost like a breaking of most people who enter pastoring. Like, if you don't have a moment where you're absolutely broken, like you, and what I mean broken is like, you've been pushing your way like all this time. And then God just kind of allows you to get to this place where you just break yourself
to the end of yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. You break yourself on like your pathway. And then you fall apart and you're like, what the heck do I do now? And then God rebuilds you and you're like, oh, I feel so much more like myself. I feel like I'm in such a better space. Like in when I say relationship, I don't mean like the general term, almost the hierarchy of between me and God. Like, oh yeah. Like God's reestablished up there. I'm where I should be, you know, sort of thing. Like unless that happens, I think that I've seen plenty of people who are maybe in that really, they seem narcissistic. They seem like they're just going for it in pastoring. And I'm like, I don't know if you've ever had that and you might benefit from it, but this is sort of an aside to what you were saying, but
yeah.
Mm-hmm. But so then you come out of college, you get a job. Now you're pastoring, you're a professional minister in the Washington Conference. If I could just ask you, I think this is something that a lot of people have wonder about and maybe have heard stories about, but like there was obviously a lot of good. Like you still wouldn't be here. You wouldn't still be here if there wasn't a lot of good. But your experience as a pastor and as a female, putting those two things together makes unique things come about. What are some of the things, if maybe I could just start out with we'll get to the goods, like the stuff that's positive, but like let's just start out with maybe some of like the, what's some of those things that you've experienced in your time as a pastor that maybe Anthony and I would just be like, what? We would never have been faced with that.
Where do I start? So sadly, I think any difficult experience that I have been through as a female pastor specifically is not unique to me, is what I've discovered, is most of the stuff that I've been through. Once I reach out to other female pastors, shout out to Jen Woody, who's been a great mentor of mine.
She's great.
And some other awesome female pastors, they've all been through this stuff too. Also some of the things I've experienced might also be coupled with the fact that I'm young and I look pretty young. I look younger than I am maybe. And so those two things together have created some difficulty, but some of the stuff I've experienced, I mean, just last year I had to go to court for a stalking situation with somebody in my church.
Right.
And that's not the first stalker I've had. It's just the most extreme. I've had about, I think, 4 or 5.
No,
I'm probably forgetting one.
But... 4 or 5 stalkers in
starting,
your life?
Starting from college, yeah, from Walla Walla on. There's one at Walla Walla that started that the stalking kind of happened after. He found out who I was in college and then the stalking happened afterwards when I was at Puyallup. But thankfully I had some good help to get through that one.
Yikes.
But yeah, almost, I think like every single church I've been in so far, there's been some sort of stalking where a male gets just kind of obsessed with the role of a female pastor for some reason and convinced that God has like told them to marry you or some weird crazy thing. And regardless, well, God, like, obviously, doesn't matter the age. Like,
God told him, Natalie. I mean, like, why are you fighting?
The emails I could show you.
Oh gosh. Wow. Is it that's always, I mean, like in those situations with stalkers, like, is it always like they have a positive, and I don't mean it positive, like good, but they have like a positive view of you and therefore they want to, that's why they want to be with you? Or is it, has it ever been like, there's like the negative side of like, you're a female pastor, I need to tell you, I need to like make you see that that's not right, or that God has told me. I don't know if it's what's putting your
in my case. I think it's been more of like the positive, but in a weird way.
Yeah. I guess when I mean positive, like it's to them, like they view you positively as opposed to negatively.
And not every one of them has been super like romantic in the sense that like they are romantically obsessed with me. Most of them have a tinge of that, some of them more than others. the worst one on that side is not the one I actually had to go to court for, but he was an older guy, much older than I am, who, like my dad's age, who was believing that he was supposed to marry me, but also a little misogynistic in that, like, he also thought that he had theology to teach me and that was going to be the pastor that would like spread his message sort of thing.
So there's just some wacky
stuff out there.
Natalie, you missed out. You could have been like the voice. You could have been like the prophetic voice of somebody.
That's what he thought.
Oh my word. Wow.
Yikes.
There've been some weird situations like that, that you have to deal with.
With your most recent court scenario, you know, share whatever you feel comfortable, but was that kind of similar or was that one a little different?
That one was a little different because the reason I had to go to court was more for fear of physical safety. So I had to get like a protection order because of the way he would, I want to be careful how I talk about it, but the way he would show up at our church, it wasn't, I think what got me, and this is so scary, is like, I feared more for other people and my church's safety than just my own. I think the sad piece is I didn't, because I'm so used to this, I didn't take it seriously soon enough. And once it got to the point where it was affecting my members and scaring members in my church, that's when I was like, oh, I think I need to do something. And when like my elders were saying like, hey, this is really a problem. How can we support you and help you? Like, that's when I realized, oh, I might actually have to like do something legally about this. And that's the sad part about it, I think, is like female pastors, we face so much of this stuff. We just kind of get used to it. And
normalized.
It can be easy to just kind of be like, oh, well, it just comes with the job. It's just part of it. Oh, it's happened before. I'll get through this fine. And not take dangerous situations as seriously as you should.
Dang.
That's really crazy that you were at the point where you were, it's so normalized for you that it took even more, like it, like you said, like affecting other people for you to say, oh, maybe this isn't.
Yeah.
Maybe this has to stop. But that's really, like, I'm so sorry. Like that's Jesse and I haven't not experienced that.
I mean, I've had to sue a couple of people because they weren't paying tithe, but I mean, other than that,
yikes.
No, I mean, that's what's crazy is like, because for you, it has to go past that space of like, oh, these people are just problematic in the church. They have a personality, they have, you know, they have an agenda, whatever it is. And so we as a church have to deal with this too. Like, this is directly around you. Because of just who you are, as opposed to like your role or your position in that church.
Because every pastor, deals with some crazy thing like that, where members that are problematic and cause issues like that. Like every pastor has those stories, and so I think for me, what has been hard has been differentiating between who are those ones that every pastor has to deal with one or two of these. Versus who are the ones that are more on the dangerous side specifically because I'm a female and are coming at me for that reason. That's probably like the most extreme example of something that I've had to deal with as a female pastor.
Wow. What's some of like the day-to-day stuff, or maybe, you know, it's not like the extremes of those situations, but just some of the stuff that like, I mean, maybe you get used to it. Not that you should, but like you get used to it, or it's just that, you know, maybe it's not day to day, or maybe it's like, you know, every so often you're experiencing somebody saying something or doing something that like, you're just like, it's because I'm a woman. You know,
I think the most common thing is not respecting, I guess, my pastoral authority, if that makes sense. And I never want to put myself on a pedestal as a pastor. Like, I think it's really important to remember, like, all of us pastors, we're normal people, just like everybody else. God's called us, sure, but God calls everybody just different things. And so I don't want to put myself on a pedestal, but I have struggled, I think, sometimes to be treated respectfully in the workplace, in my workplace, which is the church setting. And so in meetings, even if I'm the one leading or chairing the meeting, getting talked over is pretty common. I've been yelled at a surprising number of times.
Really?
Wow. Really?
Like, yeah, just kind of being talked down to a lot is really common.
Oh my gosh.
Acting like, kind of people acting like I don't know what I'm doing, or I'm not smart enough, or I don't have the knowledge or whatever. And it's always funny because it's like, no, mm-hmm. I've studied this for like, I don't even know how many years now. And I have a master's degree. Like, I do know what I'm doing. Yeah. Sure, I'm young and I recognize that I've got growing to do and maturing to do. And in 20 years, I'll know a lot more. But that's the most frustrating and difficult thing on a week-to-week basis, is there's pretty often where I feel like I've been disrespected. And again, sometimes I feel like maybe it's more just because I'm a young pastor more than just being a female pastor, but that's hard to tell.
But it's also a bit different because, I don't know if it's just that. Because I've been a young pastor and I was an idiot in a lot of ways and but I mean, it's just like you get that benefit of the doubt because of maybe the inherent way that some people look at, you know, a man and the role, mm-hmm. they're used to that, whatever it is. I've never had anybody yell at me.
Yeah.
I'm thinking ever. About it. I don't know if I've ever had that happen.
I've never had a church member yell at me.
I'm shocked.
And I was going to say, Natalie, that,
wow.
Yeah,
see, no. This is really exposing the disparity here, because I was going to say that since I'm almost done with my MDiv, so I'll be done in August. And at my new church in Texas, I remember feeling like during my interview process, this new level of like respect and pastoral. I don't know what it is, but how you said it, like respect for pastoral authority that people had for me that I wasn't even used to, because I've been a young pastor who just did undergrad as just like you. But something about having my master's and having gone to Andrews, people elevate a little bit. There's a bit more. And I was feeling that I've been feeling that recently, for better or for worse. But the fact that you're saying what you're saying, that you've been yelled at, talked over, all these things, I'm thinking back and I'm like, even as like a 23-year-old pastor, I don't think I've ever been yelled at or.
Wow. Yeah. So what I'm curious about, Natalie, is do you think
Sean's
that is
here.
Just a.
Sorry, he's a teacher.
Hi, how's it going?
I forget that he's even part of this.
Bible teacher.
We don't want to elevate ourselves. I agree with you, Natalie, but I mean, when we compare like pastors to teachers, like there's definitely like a little bit of a hierarchy there. So
there is a hierarchy. Some of us work every day while some of you work once a week. But Natalie, as a serious question though, when you look at your experience and we talk about this disparity, do you think that comes with just the role of being, like you said, being young and even just being a woman pastor, the association, you know, and that's not just an Adventism, you know, that there's other denominations obviously that do not allow women's ordination. Or even if they do, it's still young enough or fresh enough that culturally that's still an uphill battle, in many ways. So my question is, do you feel that within Adventism specifically, is it just a cultural thing that, you know, some people, it's just hard for them to accept your authority as a pastor and what your role is as someone called into this specific role of ministry? Or do you think that it's possible that within the teachings of the church, the actual structure of the church, the foundation of what Adventism is, it's lent itself to this problem where you're getting yelled at, where we have this disparity? Is that core to Adventist DNA, or is that just a human problem within Adventism?
That's really good. Because I think the kind part of me wants to brush over it and say, no, we're just all human. People just have a hard time.
We want hardcore, Natalie.
Yeah. Tell us the truth.
Heavy metal. Let's go.
But I do think, because of the way our church systemically on a worldwide level treats women in leadership, because of that, for people who are either fully against it or who are on the fence and haven't made up their mind about it, or even the ones who think they're supportive but have never had to actually work with a female pastor, that group, all of those people, struggle, I think, to treat female pastors with respect. And I think that that's that last one that I named is the one that I've experienced the most in a surprising way, is meeting people who will say with their words that they're supportive of female pastors and, oh yeah, I'm okay with women being pastors. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But then the way that they treat you says otherwise and reveals that they haven't ever worked with a female pastor or don't really understand what that's like.
Yeah. What's like an example of behavior in that context, just like to kind of add some color to the nuance of that?
Yeah. So here's something funny. Here's the funny example that I always give is that I once entered a church where they said they were supportive of a female pastor, and their idea to make me feel welcome was to, as they were setting up my office, my new office, was to turn the desk so that it would face like away from the window. So you wouldn't look in the window to the pastor's office and look underneath the desk, because they said, well, then no one will see the pastor's, see her legs. Because, you know, women only wear skirts. And
right.
It just was one of those moments where when they told me about this, I was like, well, I know you were trying to be sweet.
Yeah.
So trying to be thoughtful, but no, it didn't work. Yeah. Like it just, right. It was an example to me of like a moment, a funny moment where like people thought they were being supportive of the new female pastor, but it kind of didn't work that way for me. Cause I'm like, I obviously women don't only wear dresses and skirts all the time. And even when I do, I don't really care that you can see my ankles. Oh no. So scandalous.
Anthony has been wearing some pants where they like cut off at his ankles. And I've been trying to tell him this whole time, like you're making people sin by looking
you're
at
going your, down a slippery slope.
Exactly. But he won't listen to me. So, I mean, that's such a weird dichotomy to experience, because on the one hand, it's like, oh, it's really nice. Like they, like that weird thing of like their heart is in the right place.
They're trying.
But it's just sort of like, oh, okay. Well, we still gotta get through some stuff here. Yeah.
Because it's like in that moment, what it showed me is like they're not actually thinking about what the real difficulties are that a female pastor has. Yeah. Like it's not the moment where someone's looking in and seeing your legs or something. Like the real difficulties a female pastor faces are like, okay, in the board meeting, are you as a church leader going to back up your female pastor when someone is talking over her? Or are you going to have her back in moments when she needs it? Are you going to be watching out in your church for who the stalkers might be or who the creepers are that are going to come up and say inappropriate comments? Are you knowing ahead of time before she gets to your church who the people are that have an issue with females in leadership so that you can stop that behavior before she comes and has to deal with it all alone by herself.
That stuff takes work. Things. It's way easier to do, you know, it's the same thing as like a brand changing, you know, their, their marketing picture for Juneteenth or something. It's way easier to do some sort of performative whatever than actually address the thing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
with all of that being said, Natalie, it's this interesting space that you inhabit, because you're a pastor, you are supported by the local conference, and the union, I believe. And there is, obviously support for you being a pastor at the local level, even past the conference, like in churches, cause, they want you there. And yet there's this distance between your existence at the local level and the worldwide, denomination in its statements on women in ministry. And so like, we just want to ask you the question, since we're doing this series called What is an Adventist? We wanted to talk to you for a few reasons, not just because you're a female pastor, but because, you're someone that I have known to be someone who is dedicated to Adventism, but is also, just as you talked about, you've grown a lot in your own, like what that expression looks like and how you hold that. And then second, also in your unique space compared to us, your unique space as a female in ministry, having to deal with this dichotomy of this church that you love. And yet if it wasn't for maybe a couple levels of that organization, you couldn't do what God had called you to do because of that. And so it's sort of like, well, first of all, what is your definition of an Adventist? And then after that, maybe if we could get into like, well then, yeah, who gets to define what an Adventist is? So let's just start off with that, that first part. Like, what is an Adventist to you?
Good questions. I think it's easy to define a Seventh-day Adventist based on like, oh, well, these are our fundamental beliefs.
Yeah.
But this maybe is my westernized view showing, but I think for me, if someone believes that they are a Seventh-day Adventist and they choose to align themselves with the Seventh-day Adventist church and Seventh-day Adventist faith, and they identify with that, then they are one. And this sounds funny to say maybe to some Adventists, but I think that that could be the case regardless of have they become a baptized member or profession of faith. Because in our church, that's typically the way that you like officially enter the Seventh-day Adventist church is either you're baptized and then you have official membership in the church that allows you to serve in offices in your church and have responsibility. Or if you've been baptized in another denomination to join by profession of faith in your local church and transfer your membership there or whatever. That's kind of like the traditional route of what we often do. But I've met a lot of people who maybe grew up in the Seventh-day Adventist church and maybe they don't attend every week anymore. But if you ask them about their faith and what they believe spiritually, they'd say, oh, I'm a Seventh-day Adventist. And they identify with it. And a lot of times, like the typical things that draw us together are like, oh, well, we worship on Saturday, the Sabbath. And kind of like the five S's, if you've heard those talked about,
classic.
State of the dead, like, oh, I don't believe people just go straight to hell when they die. Some of that kind of stuff, I think draws us together. But I also think a huge piece of being an Adventist is the cultural side of it. Is that we have a way of doing life where we live in a very connected community. And that's, I think, one of the beautiful things about Adventism, but we also have to be careful to make sure we don't only associate with ourselves, but we have this huge community that stretches worldwide where you can go to pretty much any Seventh-day Adventist church anywhere in the world, get talking with someone, and you'll find out that you have a mutual friend. Or that you're related somehow, or you know someone.
The degrees of separation are small.
It's this big worldwide web that's very connected. And I, growing up, I always thought that that was one of the coolest things about being an Adventist.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, Natalie, and this isn't a loaded question or anything like that, but it sounds to me like... For you, Adventism is more about being part of a community as opposed to like the specific doctrinal statements of belief. And I don't, I'm not saying that you're dismissing that, the doctrinal statements of belief, as much as what you were saying sounds like that.
Good clarification question.
Yeah. Like, what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on that? Cause again, this is not a loaded question. I'm not even going in any direction. I thought it was interesting that you described it that way because there are, like, we talked with a guy who is an ex-Adventist and, and his whole thing is like, if you don't believe in the 28 fundamentals as they're written, then you're Adventist light, you know, like you're not actually an Adventist, but it sounds like for you, it's almost more of like the family experience of Adventism as opposed to that sort of like, that sort of doctrine, it has to be doctrinal.
Well, I think, and you mentioned something earlier too about like how someone you talked with had mentioned that like, unless you believe every single one of those things in the fundamental beliefs, then you're not Adventist. And so it's such a funky thing to me, I think, since going through seminary, because pre-seminary, I probably would have said like, yeah, you have to believe those fundamental beliefs pretty strictly if you want to call yourself a Seventh-day Adventist. But since studying those in seminary, I don't remember which professor it was, but one of them said, you know, sometimes we misuse the way the fundamental beliefs are worded because yes, those things are voted by the church in general conference session, if I'm remembering that correctly. But he said that originally they were developed to kind of be a display to the world of like, hey, this is what we believe. And so if someone was to ask you like, well, what does Seventh-day Adventist believe in? You could say, well, here, like, this is what we believe. And it's not supposed to be used as like a gatekeeping tool to decide how Adventist you are. Because so for me, I think it's super fascinating that if you go around the world, like, yes, the family piece I mentioned earlier is very true, but also you will find that Adventism is done very differently all around the world. And there's a lot of variance when you get down to the nitty gritty of Seventh-day Adventist beliefs. And if you talk to pastors and members all around the world about those fundamental beliefs and the nitty gritty details of them, there's a lot of variance of what people think. Like, we tend to agree on the big overarching stuff. But when you get into the details is where there's a lot of variance among Seventh-day Adventists. And I think that that, if we use it right, is a strength in our church rather than a weakness. Because if we all thought exactly the same, that could maybe be not a great thing at times. But that variance of belief, it causes us to dialogue. Sometimes that dialogue turns into argument, maybe not so healthy, but the intellectual dialogue and the dialogue between scholars on the details of what we believe as Seventh-day Adventists is very fascinating. And seminary taught me that it's okay to have that dialogue, basically, and to question the details. And you're still a Seventh-day Adventist, even if you're questioning pieces of our fundamental beliefs, because of our belief in like the present truth idea that like God could reveal something new to us. There could be something that we've missed before. Like Ellen White and her time frame, like they didn't think that once they died, that was it. Nothing could ever be changed ever again, or God could never again reveal any new truth. Like, they knew that this thing, this Seventh-day Adventist worldwide thing that had started, that God could reveal something new to us and could use us in new ways. And so I think that's something now as a pastor I'm trying to be more open-minded about, is that there can be a lot of variance within Seventh-day Adventism. And part of that comes from my experience in different churches. Like, I have participated in very traditional churches and very what a lot of people would call like the conservative end of the church. I have been in churches that were extremely liberal, or churches that did things that other Seventh-day Adventists would say, oh, you're not Adventist,
right?
Adventist enough or something. So it's kind of funny to me, because it's like each, this is where like the power in Seventh-day Adventism really is at the local level, because each church gets to decide how they're going to worship God together and practice those beliefs in their local setting.
Yeah, that kind of brings up the question, to go back to the uniqueness of your position, at least the uniqueness compared to Anthony and I specifically, because there is that funny thing of like, here you are, your conference, the conference I serve in, the union that you serve in. I don't know if the union that I'm part of, no, Pacific Union, I think, has also come out in support of women's ordination. And it was like, unions are out of compliance, you know, so like you're serving in what has been titled out of compliant local organizations, right? Yeah, apparently, right? So it's that funny thing where it's like, well, then who gets to decide? And it sounds like where you fall is that the local church ultimately gets to decide what Adventism is, to a certain degree. I mean, obviously, like there's some set of like unifying stuff, but really, if you're going to not go crazy, the local church really gets to define a large amount of what it means to be Adventist. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
I think I would say that in reality, that's what happens.
Interesting. Yeah.
In reality, that's what happens. And I say this, like, I have a very unique view of Adventism right now because, surprise, surprise, I am on the North American Division Executive Committee.
Oh, wow.
And
That's what it was. I was trying to remember because I knew you were on some sort of NAD committee, but that's what it was. Okay.
Nice.
Yeah. And that has been so fascinating to see
what is that like?
How policies are made and decisions are made at that level of the church. And it's interesting because it's like, it's really not that different. It feels a lot more intense maybe and important, but it's not that different from maybe how things go in a local church board meeting sometimes.
So nothing gets done. You talk too long.
Sometimes maybe, but being a part of it has humbled me because
I didn't say it.
Savage. It's made me realize, like, I get the chance to sit at a table, a big table, and an important table, and be a part of making decisions that impact a lot of people's lives and careers. Yeah. So it's interesting because it's like I'm at the local level most of the time in my local church. I also participate in certain committees and things at the conference level of my local conference. I also help out a little bit with stuff at my union and am in contact with them about certain things, and then also at the NAD level. And it's been fascinating to kind of see how those different levels operate and interact with each other. And so practically, yes, on a week-to-week or a day-to-day basis, the local church is really what's dictating how Seventh-day Adventism appears to the world. But on an organizational level, like, the organization also does with making policies and deciding how we're going to present ourselves as an organization, as a church. So it's kind of both and, I guess.
Natalie, if I could follow up, I think part of why this question is important is because we have such a vast spread, right? As you have alluded to, we have such a vast spread of of answers to this question. And, you know, you've given an answer here. But when we interviewed Ted Wilson, he was very much like, 28 fundamental beliefs. If you don't confess these, you're not an Adventist, essentially.
He didn't say that word.
He didn't say that. Yeah. I'm paraphrasing. I'm paraphrasing with fresh fries. I'm paraphrasing him, but that was essentially the spirit, what I heard. And so, and you know, when we interviewed the ex-Adventist, he essentially was saying, you know, as Jesse said, a similar thing. Like, if you don't assent to these, you're pretty much, you're not really an Adventist. You're kind of like a fake Adventist. You're an Adventist light. So I guess what we're trying to discern, and I think what a lot of people feel, people who listen to this podcast and our friends, people, you know, we know, a lot of young adults, I think, especially feel like, man, if I don't maybe agree with every single one of these things on this list, does that mean I'm not an Adventist? Or if I have a different interpretation, or if I, you know, don't know if God created the world in six literal days, or if I don't, you know, have some questions about eschatology or Ellen White or whatever.
Eschatology is end time. Sorry, just nobody knows what that means outside of us as pastors. I don't even think Sean knows what that means. I'm just kidding.
Glad you said it for me, Jesse. I was not in the same exact class as you were at Walla Walla or anything like that.
Sean, you have a religion. You have a religion major, which, again, we're not about putting ourselves in pedestals, right. but if we're talking about it, that is the lower pedestal.
It's true. So religion over theology. It's true.
No, it's theology it's over true. Religion, Sean. I just want to be very clear. So.
Yeah, that's fine. But I was going to ask, quick, Natalie, Sean. Are there any...
Sean, let me... I feel like I didn't really
It's okay. You are a theology major, so you can talk first. That's fine.
Yeah. Thank you, Sean.
You get priority.
Sean, we're beating Sean into compliance. This is perfect.
This is the compliance committee.
We're a microcosm. All of this to say, Jesse, do you want to define microcosm for the... All of this to say, I guess that's really the core question and why we did this series. We wanted to know exactly
who decides.
Yeah, who decides, and can I call myself an Adventist if I disagree with someone else who, and especially if I disagree with someone on the GC level who says, no, you need to, this is what makes an Adventist.
Yeah.
Is there room?
Yeah, I guess my short response to that of how I think about it, I think, is because I serve as a local pastor. And because, like, I love theology and it's super fascinating to me, but I'm also a very practical person, when it comes to ministry, and the bulk of what I end up doing on a week to week basis is more conversational with people, of checking in on their life and where they're at and their spiritual health and relationship with God, their mental health, how they're really doing on the deep level. And so my perspective for myself has always been, in my faith, if I want to change the organization, I can't do that from outside of it. Mm-hmm. I can only do that from inside of it. And so if I want to see things change in a positive direction, like, just using the example of being a female pastor, if I want to give other little girls the chance to imagine themselves doing that someday, I can only do that by being that myself. And that's not like the sole reason I'm a pastor or anything, but it is something I hold on to in times when I'm discouraged of like, well, part of the reason that I'm here is to hopefully make a positive difference in the Adventist church going forward. And so that's what I try to encourage people who are questioning, who are maybe like, you know, I don't know if I really agree with every single thing in the 28 fundamental beliefs, but most of it I do believe in, and I believe the Bible, or I do have this connection with God. I do believe in a lot of the Adventist church stuff, and I feel connected to it. I'm not going to tell that person, oh, well, you're not an Adventist, and so you have to leave, go find somewhere else to worship God. You can't worship with us. Like, the practical side of me as a pastor is not going to say that to somebody. Instead, I'm like, well, let's explore together. Like, let's journey together and ask the deep, hard questions that we don't know the answers to. Let's be brave enough to face that. Yeah. And it's okay if you don't have all the answers. I certainly don't. I don't know everything. And it's okay to question and to ask and to still identify as a Seventh-day Adventist, or to choose not to identify as a Seventh-day Adventist, but maybe still still attend an Adventist church. I have a number of people, you know, like every church I've been in, I think there's people who come on a week-to-week basis that I would say, yeah, they're a part of my church. That's a Seventh-day Adventist church. But if I asked them, they would say, oh, I'm not a Seventh-day Adventist yet. Like, I don't know if I believe in all that stuff, but maybe they've been there for a decade or something. So that's where it's kind of funny. It's like,
what? There's so many questions I could ask in response. I want to play devil's advocate, but even before I do, I just actually want to admire that conclusion you've come to, because we've spoken to some others too, that it, you know, we talk about this process, even just being in this journey with God of understanding him and what it means to be a Christian, a follower of Jesus, you know, and we can get into the idea of sanctification, right? This idea that we are becoming more like God. He is refining us. And when you talk about this idea, it's only because I love hymns, and Anthony knows I love old timer songs like Refiner's Fire.
Yes. Classic.
But but in all seriousness, The challenge, you know, that happens in Adventism is the way that we intellectualize everything to the point of we are either in or out. You're in the remnant or you're not. And we struggle as a denomination to have this idea of a spectrum of Adventism and be okay with that. You know, this idea of being on a journey spiritually, as much as we'd like to say that we believe in that as a denomination, in practice, we have that's a hard pill to swallow because either that's we're true. Right or wrong is the attitude. And so and my mind immediately goes there too, Natalie, is this idea of, is there really a point where someone in your church, if they believed something or didn't believe something, to be truly a non-negotiable? It's like, no, you're clearly no longer Adventist. Like, at what point, you know, can it happen where, you know, and the fear is relativism, the idea that you know, everyone can truly believe and be on such a wide journey, you know, what is it, you know, do we lose our identity in Adventism? And maybe the question I'll ask you is, you know, is there a certain point where that is the case, where we lose our identity? Is that something to be concerned about, is losing Adventist identity? Or is that really something we've blown out of proportion?
I think it's blown out of proportion, because again, what I see on the local level, that's not a huge problem. I think on the organizational level is where we blow it out of proportion, is when we're having conversations at higher levels of the church, or where we're talking about big policy changes or the wording changes in our beliefs or those kinds of things, or maybe even just in seminary classes where we address that kind of stuff, or in seminars, weekend seminars. That tends to be where it kind of gets blown up a lot. But at the local level, at least in my experience, I haven't seen that too badly, but that also might be because I don't think I've ever served in a church that's really extreme on one end of the Adventist spectrum or the other. And as a female in this conference with the kind of churches we have in Washington Conference, like, there are certain churches I will never serve in just by being female. And so I will never see that end of the spectrum, maybe. But Yeah, I don't know. And this is where I also wondered when you asked me about this podcast, am I really the right person to answer this? I'm not quick on my feet with theological stuff.
You're killing it.
But I think about this too sometimes, of like, at what point, you know, at what point have you reached the edge of the Adventist spectrum and fallen off into something else?
Yeah. Into the abyss of
heresy,
of the
yeah, all the heresy. Yeah. I don't know.
Babylon.
Yeah. No, I guess, but I appreciate you saying that, Natalie, because like, it does what you're saying about the local level. Like, it is funny because there are, you know, for instance, there's churches that come out and they're like, we're anti-Trinitarian. We don't even believe that, you know, God is three mm-hmm. in one. And it's stuff like that you're like, you're going back to the very beginning of Christianity. Like, that's disagree with that. Like, there's maybe like hierarchies around some of this stuff that definitely, like, it is something to be.
Alden Thompson has a great model for this, you guys. You guys remember Alden Thompson? I'm assuming Natalie remembers Alden Thompson.
I did have classes from him.
All four of us had a professor.
What's in the key?
Sean, shut up. Nobody wants to hear. All four of us had a professor who—
we've talked about this before.
He taught multiple classes, and in every single class, it was the exact same content.
And on his exams, he would write, what is the professor's view of this?
Yeah, yeah,
it wasn't even—
so that's what Sean is referencing. It's interesting because it's like, maybe there is hierarchy around what ultimately matters. You don't believe that Jesus is God. There's some issues that come out of that may have some sort of like, yeah, I don't know how that works.
You're not really a Christian.
You're not even falling off the spectrum of Adventism. Yeah. That's the spectrum of Christianity, like, which is even bigger, you know? You run into stuff like, then you run into stuff like creationism and stuff. It's like, you know, there's lots of people who there's a struggle of, I don't exactly know, and I'm okay with mm-hmm. not knowing whether it was six literal days or if it was a different way. And there's questions that I don't like that are unanswered in the, it's not six literal days. And there's questions that come up with six literal days. Like, let's hold that intention maybe, you know, and struggle through that. But then that brings me to like, maybe it's even a bit about your spirit. How much of it is like, I'm really wrestling with this. I don't understand. I don't know. And I still want to be part of this family and I still want to grow with it. Or how much of it is like, the family has to coalesce all around what I believe, you know, versus I wonder how much of it boils down to those things. And it's way easier. And I think the struggle, and we will always have this as humans. The struggle will always be, it's easier to create the lines and say, this is in, this is out, because then at least it's consistent, right? At least it's like, well, okay, because part of the problem is like, okay, we set lines here, but then, oh, well, this person now is in a different church, is saying different things, but then they're pointing to the other church. He's like, well, you let him do that, you know? So that, so then it gets messy and it gets complex. And I don't have an answer for that, but it is interesting, I think, to really engage with what you're saying, that there, if you're going to be realistic, as well as the philosophical ideas of like, okay, there's at some point there's fences around Adventism, but maybe they're just a lot wider, or they're a lot less clear than we have made them. But at the same time, like, maybe it is just at the realistic local level, from a realistic day-to-day perspective, you have to deal with it in there. And maybe if it is something that's starting to rise to the level where it's becoming bigger and bigger, that's where other levels of Adventism start to address those things. But it's just an interesting, like, I'm just thinking about that as it's not clean, but also life isn't clean. Like, life isn't just these clearly delineated things all the time.
But I'm glad you brought that up though, because I don't think I was thinking of it in that way when we were initially talking about this. And it does bring up, like, yes, also as a pastor, there are times when I have genuine concerns about certain Sabbath school teachers and what they're teaching or what someone is doing when they're interacting with their kids and how they are mentoring our young people and what they're saying to them. Those kinds of things are concerns to me, because I have seen how damaging theology can be if used wrongly. So this is kind of the other side of the coin, maybe, to how I was thinking of it, is like, yes, there does need to be some structure within our Seventh-day Adventist, I guess, beliefs or whatever, because like the anti-Trinitarian beliefs that have creeped into some areas of our church and that kind of stuff, like, there are things like that that can be very, very damaging. Last generation theology can be very damaging. And I have seen young people's lives just be ripped up by this stuff.
Yeah.
So that's where it is like, yeah, we do need to wrestle with it carefully. And we do need to think about, I think as leaders, especially those of us that have responsibility, like I do at the local level, think about like, okay, as an Adventist organization around the world, this is what we believe. And how do I make sure that that's safely being practiced in a healthy way while still mm-hmm. allowing for questions within my local church? And
yeah,
I'll share a story here, I guess, and I'll try and be careful about how I share this story. But there was a situation, this is many years ago, with a young person who I'd known for many years of their life. And I reconnected with this person when they were a little bit older. And they shared with me about what had happened in those in-between years, where they had been kind of taken off as a young person to one of these areas where Adventism is being practiced in a very extreme way, to the point where I feel like they were on the edges of Seventh-day Adventism, and some of their theology was very damaging. And this young person told me stories of how prayer meeting was not prayer meeting, but was rather the leaders or the grown-ups in the church critiquing this young person and saying, well, you did this and you dressed this way and you did these things. And so that's all your sins this week and you need to repent for them. And there was just some like really, really damaging stuff.
Wait, what's wrong with that? No, I'm just kidding.
Jesse's like, well, that's what we do every week.
That's what I'm doing with my kids right now. Wait, hold on. No, I'm just kidding.
But just imagine being like a teenager and you go to church and this is what's happening because of the theology that the adults believe in. This is how they're treating the young person. Thank goodness. Like it was kind of on the edge of like abusive, some of the stuff that was told to me.
I mean, that sounds like it. Yeah.
Thankfully that young person got out of that situation and is in a much healthier place now. From what I know of them, they're in a much healthier place now. But it was an example to me of like, okay, yes, there are some times where if you're skirting on the edge and your beliefs really don't align with Seventh-day Adventism anymore, like this is damaging, and I wouldn't want the Seventh-day Adventist name to be associated with what's going on in that church or that place, you know? And in this case, I'm talking about a situation that I would say was on the very extreme conservative side, if that makes sense. I hate using those terms, honestly, like conservative and liberal. So hopefully nobody listening gets offended by those. I just can't think of better terms right now to use. So this church was kind of on that extreme side with how they were doing some things. And I'm sure on the other end of the spectrum too, there could be some damaging things being done. But that's where I think like it's the responsibility of those of us who are leaders in the local churches, not just employees, but also like local elders and Sabbath school teachers and whatever, to be in constant dialogue with each other, growing our faith, studying our Bibles together, and making sure that like what we're teaching is sound and is not damaging.
I think a piece of it is like, I was talking with Josh, who's the lead pastor of Anthem here, and we were talking about like, what does it mean to be a disciple? And he was just kind of going back. It really hinges on this idea of openness. Like, are you open to God? Are you open to him and his heart for you? Like, are you open to that? And if you are, then it creates a whole world of opportunity with God. And I wonder how much of it is like, that is a key piece of how we even move forward together as Adventists. Like, what does it mean to be an Adventist? It's almost like openness has to be a piece of what you believe to be important, especially just, you know, if you're going to take theology out of it, just from like a person to person standpoint, because you're right. I mean, like I run into people who it's not like we differ on belief systems across the board, and it's such nuance. It's like, it's small little things that end up mattering so much to somebody because they experience, let's say someone experienced an abusive spiritual situation. So they don't want to go back to like the old way of talking about things because it was so damaging to them.
Yeah.
And, but here I am like, well, I think those things are important. And so, you know, there can be fights and battles between those things, but really it comes down to like, if there's a heart of openness for the other person, if it's mutual, then it feels like you can get through a lot and you can even disagree mm-hmm. on a lot and still walk together on it, or even just grow in towards like a sense of balance from that space. Mm-hmm. But it feels like when we create the hard lines, especially to some degree unnecessarily, and I don't know how to define that.
Yeah.
That's when you start creating division out of what doesn't have to be division. And yeah. I wonder how much we have done that as a church simply out of because we lack openness towards one another, liberals towards conservatives and vice versa. And it ends up being really damaging. And so that's where like what you're saying and what you're bringing out, Natalie, about there's almost this realistic practice at the local level that ends up being how Adventism is actually lived out. Mm-hmm. And in that space, that is where it matters the most to engage, mm-hmm. right? Like, yes, maybe the stuff at the higher levels, like that is important. It's not that that's unimportant, but like, that's the space that matters most to engage. And then even as you're talking about, if we're going to add on to that idea of like, and if I leave, I don't get to define what local Adventism looks like. You know, that's not to shame people into staying by any means, but maybe right, it's like definitely. Something that is speaking yeah. to somebody's heart of just like, yeah, like if I leave, then the children in my, you know, the kids that I care about, I don't want them to end up going through what I went through. Well, I have the opportunity mm-hmm. to help them not. And there's that kind of stuff that starts to play into itself of like, okay, I can still be an Adventist and not have to like fit within these specific, like really tight, closed in boundaries. And yet still consider myself part of the family. Like it feels like a far more gentle way to be a follower of Jesus, especially in the Adventist context.
Because that's my personality, I suppose. Like I would describe myself as a gentle follower of Jesus.
Yes. I think all of us would agree with that about you.
Just my perspective. Yeah. But it's what you made me think of is just that it's all of this is super multifaceted. Like, mm-hmm. honestly, at the local level, a lot of people don't pay attention to what happens at the NAD level or the GC yeah. level or the yeah. policies that get made. Like us pastors or teachers or people who are into it, we do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A lot of local people do not. Some yeah. local yeah. people don't even know what those things are.
Yeah.
And so that's where like the faith is practiced at the local level. But I think this is also where it's really important at every level of the church organization, which I didn't think I'd be talking so much about, but it's come into it somehow. It's really important to be listening to the Holy Spirit. Mm. And here's where we kind of come back to what Sean mentioned earlier, sanctification and, mm-hmm. and those things, growing in Jesus and everything. It's super important to have an actual living, breathing relationship with Jesus, first yeah. of all, and be then listening to the Spirit in your life. Because I also sadly have met a lot of Seventh-day Adventists, and this is common in the local church, I think, who are just cultural Adventists, yeah. if that makes yeah. sense, since we talked about that aspect, who are only at church because they're used to it. Mm-hmm. And when they go home, or it's what they grew up with or whatever, and that's where their friends are. But when they go home or in their private time, like they have zero connection with God on their own.
Yeah. Yeah.
They maybe have never felt what a relationship with God feels like. And to me, that's heartbreaking just because I have experienced that and how beautiful and freeing it is. And so mm-hmm. I want that for every single person.
Yeah.
But I know that there's a lot of people who don't have that and yet would call themselves Seventh-day Adventist and would read the beliefs and say they agree with all of it. But yeah. it's a logical thing rather than like a heart thing.
Yeah.
And so for me, and this ties back to my story, even as a kid, I think the very first call I felt from Jesus was to share that you can have a relationship with him and yeah. share what that was like for me and encourage other people to have their own individual relationship with Jesus too. Mm-hmm. And explore what it's like to be led by the Spirit and ask God bold things, ask him to guide you, ask him to lead in your life and see what happens. And for me, it's powerful because God has done huge things in my life as a result of those kinds of prayers. And I've experienced just transformative stuff, which is probably why I still stick with religion to this day. Mm-hmm. But it's, yeah, that's just something I want to encourage for everybody, is like, that's at the core of it, is having that focus on Jesus, that relationship, personal relationship with him, because who cares about all the theological decisions we're making if we don't actually sure. have a relationship with Jesus? We could argue Bible yeah. facts all day long, but none of that yeah. means anything if yeah. it's not being led yeah. by the Spirit.
Yeah.
Instead, yeah.
Well, Natalie, I know that when we were discussing you coming on the podcast, you were, as you mentioned already, like, oh, who am I to come on and everything like that. But number one, I'll say this, who are we, right? The three of us are just, we're nobodies too. And the second piece I'll say is, it's so important to have this conversation with someone in the local context, a local pastor. And so even though we have had conversations with conference leaders, you know, Ted Wilson, other leaders, this conversation is equally, if not more important, because like you've said, and actually other guests we've had on, that what actually happens in our church happens at the local level. And so your experiences, your stories, what mm-hmm. you've gone through, is so important for others to hear, because that's what's going on in our church in reality. Like, it's important to hear from our church leaders too, but for us to know what it means to be Adventists, we need to talk to those that have their boots on the ground, so to speak, mm-hmm. like the people mm-hmm. that are doing it every week at the local context. So again, thank you for being willing. I know that you said you didn't feel like you could think on your feet, but you mm-hmm. did. I think you did amazing just to
fantastic.
Share your Thanks, stories, share your perspective. And so we appreciate you taking the time to do
well,
this.
If I could just mm-hmm. brag on Natalie, and you know, I mean this from the bottom of my heart, Natalie, like, one of the things that has been really cool for me is to have the opportunity to work with several different female pastors. And it's one of those things, and I'll just out myself on where I stand on this, if it's not clear, but like, it is shocking to me.
Jesse's anti-women's ordination.
He is Walter, Walter Veith level.
Oh dear.
Anti-W.
What I want now is to put somebody in their place. No, from the bottom of my heart, it's shocking to me. It's absolutely shocking to me, having had the opportunity to work with you and other female pastors. Like, how can you say that God hasn't called you and them? Like,
yeah,
I've seen the calling of God laid out on your life. I've seen how you bring your unique personality and image bearing relationship with God into your pastoring, mm-hmm. and that is huge. It is. I don't know how else to describe it. If you don't know Natalie, then if you meet her, it will become immediately clear that Natalie is not only is she kind, not only is she incredibly compassionate, but also like, you're solid. Like, it a lot of the time people might say, like, some people who are kind and compassionate, like, yeah, they do that. But sometimes people who are more my natural way of thinking, it's like, oh, well, but where's the logic? Where's the theology? Where's all of that? But like, you have all of that. Mm-hmm. And what I appreciate about you is your holistic perspective. And you even pointed it out in this conversation that like, it's incredible to me that you have grown up into this space of knowing your call of God, and yet having a space on earth that doesn't acknowledge it, you know, that yeah. you work for technically. And yet you can look at the organization means and see it like, I see value there. I see the value yeah. of how all of this plays together.
That alone is wild, because that must be difficult. And maybe it's kind of like what you said with the stocking thing, maybe a little different, but how it's just so normalized for you that you don't True. Even consider yeah. like, oh yeah, the organization I work for doesn't really weird. Fully acknowledge me as a, yeah. you know, like a competent employee.
Yeah. And people have asked us to talk about, you know, women, when are you going to talk about women's ordination as a topic on the podcast, which we haven't
Actually,
done.
We technically started out with it, but haven't talked about it since really.
Yeah. I mean, but not as a specific topic in itself, like the debate, you know?
Yeah.
And I'll just answer it with this. Like, when we have people like you on, Natalie, it's become abundantly clear beyond the doctrine. I just simply respond to anyone that asks, okay, how do we go with this verse or this passage or whatever? Because we've argued endlessly over this topic as a church, to the point where mm-hmm. when Ted Wilson came on to our podcast, he said straight up, and again, this is nothing against him, he just told us before recording, I will not mm-hmm. talk about women's ordination. You know, it's become such a, it's become an exhausted topic, but my, yeah. beyond doctrine, right? There's different sides on women's ordination. Beyond doctrine, evidence of your ministry, along with many other female pastors that we've worked with, conference leaders, the fruit is abundantly clear that the Spirit is working in female leaders within the Adventist Church. And so beyond the doctrine, you see the fruit of what's happening in your story and in others. So that's partly my answer is, what do we need to discuss at this point? You can see the evidence. Yeah.
I have examples of that. Like, here's maybe why I stick with it, is the little nuggets God gives me to pull me through. So the ordination topic, that's a whole thing of its own.
Sure.
If you want to study where it comes from, if you want to make a Catholic Church joke in Adventism, and all our silly issues with that, comes from the Catholic Church, guys. Anyway, so it's a funny thing. It's a topic worth studying, though. I have a lot of peace on it now.
Sure.
But there's a couple things that stand out to me that God has done that have let me know that I am called by him or ordained by him, if we want to use that word. Mm-hmm. And so I just feel like I don't have to worry about it. So one moment that was just really special to me, I don't remember if any of you were on this trip. If so, I apologize for forgetting. But I went on one of the Bibleance tours with Carl Cosart, one of our professors at Walla Walla.
Classic.
It was such an awesome tour. And we ended up being in Ephesus, a place where female leadership was very present in Bible times in the church there. The night that I think it was 2015 vote on women's ordination was happening.
Oh, wow.
That's the date. That's where we were. And I was on this trip, and there was a few other theology guys there from my Walla Walla theology people. And they did something really sweet. They took me down to the edge of the water. We were like on the Aegean Sea overlooking this beautiful sunset. They took me down and they said, "We're going to pray over you right now. And this is going to be your ordination service."
Oh, wow.
And it was, I was crying. I mean, you can imagine. Wow. It was so sweet. Like, I remember
beautiful.
That
oh,
moment to this day. Each one of them prayed such affirming things over me, how they had seen God move in my life. And so as I graduated, I just held on to that. Because I graduated right in that season, like 2015, right when that vote happened. It was a real weird time to go into ministry.
Oh, my God.
But I had peace because of that. And then also now, because of something God has done at every single one of the churches that I've ever been in, where there are people that have issue with it, I find this thing happens where often women actually will come up and privately and very gently and kindly tell me that they are a little uncomfortable with having a female pastor, but they want to be kind and respectful towards me. And there have been multiple women who have told that to me early on when I'm at their church. And thankfully, all of them have been super kind and super respectful. And most of them have chosen, like, I remember one of them, she said, "I feel like God is telling me that even though I don't agree with this, I should call you pastor. So I'm going to call you Pastor Natalie." So in every circumstance, they've been kind about it. But God has done this amazing thing where I've chosen, I'm never going to argue with people about it. I'm just going to let God make up his mind with them. Holy Spirit do his thing. And every church, by the end of my time there, the same people, every single one of them, have come up to me privately and said, "God has changed my mind. I now understand why there should be women in ministry, because I've seen God work through you. And
they
I'm going to encourage our little girls now to do stuff for Jesus."
Dang.
So that makes it worth it.
That's
I don't
cool.
have to argue it. Like, the Holy Spirit can do that all on his own.
God does it.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That makes me almost like I'm on the verge of tearing up on that, just hearing that, because Natalie, that's so cool. And just your faithfulness of following God through this. I mean, it is so cool to see the ripple effects of what God does through faithfulness. And it's the ripple effects of, I mean, you said it earlier, but like, even if those girls don't become pastors, it's a completely different world that they're that has been opened up to them. And if they do, I mean, that's amazing too. But it's just like, it's the, not only has your faithfulness through like, just it's done the normal pastoral things, but like, you've done stuff that Anthony and I can never do, you know, because of who you are and how God has called you. Mm-hmm. And that's I love that God does that. And then second, I just love as an affirmation to you, the faithfulness of, yeah, graduating in that season and just being like, okay, God, like they just, here like it was just said that I'm not technically supposed to be a pastor in this organization.
So I'm going
to
do it.
And I'm graduating right into that. Okay. Right. Let's see how this goes.
Very stubborn.
Yeah. But I mean, that's what's so cool. And so I, you know, just as a coworker, as a friend,
a colleague,
like it is a really amazing thing. And Natalie, I say this to people. I'm like, there's a few people that I know that are pastors that I'd be like, I'd let you be my pastor. And you're one of them. So I just, aww. I just want you to know that. So, but, we do need to run, but I just wanted to say, Natalie, if there is anyone out there who is like, should I be a pastor? And they're kind of in the same situation as you, what would you say to them?
I'd say, reach out to me. Let's have a conversation about it, because there's so much I could say. It's a hard career. I'll be honest about that. It's not an easy thing to do. And you'll get beat up in the process. A lot of careers experience that at some point. But I think it was at Walla Walla, our professors would tell us, like, if you can do anything else, do it. If not, become a pastor and trust where God is calling you. I don't remember all of what they would say when they said that, but just hold on to God. Make sure that you've got your relationship with Him solid, and you know that it's God that's calling you and not you seeking man's approval or seeking fame or any of that kind of stuff. But it can also be a deeply, deeply fulfilling career. Like every week I'm touched by something. And for me, it's often kids, something that God does through kids that I get to work with. And I just feel so lucky on like a weekly basis. Like, wow, I get to do this as my job. I get to see someone go through this healing as my job. Yeah. I get to see someone grow in this way or improve their mental health or finally overcome something in their life. Like, I get to do that as my job. That's so cool. So it can be deeply fulfilling. And if it's a career that you're considering, like, spend some deep time in prayer about it and then talk to some people who are doing it. See what it's like.
Wise.
Thank you, Natalie. We appreciate you. Seriously.
Thanks so much.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. This is fun.
Yeah.
Well, all right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Seeking What They Sought. Before we rush to a close, wanted to just pause and say thank you. We are really, really grateful for you all, not only for listening, but for all the conversations that we've been having recently, from emails and messages, DMs, text messages you've sent us, if you know us. We are just really, really grateful for those conversations. They're the reason we did this podcast, and we're just really, really grateful for you all. So please, if you have thoughts and you haven't reached out, please send us an email or send us just a DM on Instagram or drop a comment under one of the posts. We would love to have conversations and hear what you think. Now, if you didn't know, we actually have a Patreon. It's something that we mentioned during the off season, but we really, really wanted to up the ante and be a little more intentional, a little more professional going forward with this new series and going forward with the podcast in general. So we have started a Patreon. There are some fun, cool perks that you get for signing up. It's going a long way to help us make more content like this for you guys, and we really appreciate it. So if you want to support us, you can hit up the Patreon. There's a link in our bio on Instagram, and we would be really, really grateful. Well, I think that's just about it. So we will see you guys next time on Seeking What They Sought.